Very nice. Okay, so those of you who want to change your posture, go to the toilet. I usually call it the letting go rooms, and do some other letting go over there. There's some people outside, but it's warm tonight, so some people like staying outside. But there's lots of space up the front, so if you want to come further up the front, I don't know, it doesn't seem really necessary this evening. Okay, that's more people coming in, going out. Very good. So I know that I speak so much, give so many talks. I just come back from a teaching tour in Thailand and also again one night in Singapore. And every night of my life it seems I give a talk. And there's only so many things you can talk about, so it always happens to be a little bit of repetition. But I found out on my trip overseas that this happens to everybody. And there was a story about a long time ago that Professor Albert Einstein, he was on a teaching tour of universities in the United States, obviously quite a few years ago now, and they arranged to have like a car and a chauffeur for him as he went from university to university, because he's a very famous man. And he was teaching all these professors and other researchers about the latest discoveries in his main field, which was relativity. And his driver was listening to him every day as he kept sort of practicing his speech. And then when, after many, many days, the driver said, "Look, you know, I've been listening to you so much over the days, always the same sort of stuff you're talking, I could probably give the speech myself," said the driver. And so Professor Einstein actually replied, "Well, why not? Give it a try. You know, just frizz up your hair a little bit, put on some glasses, and you'll probably look the same. They won't recognize, you know, who's who." So that's what he did. The next university, Albert Einstein's driver gave the talk. And Albert Einstein just sat at the back, being the driver. And it was such a good talk that, you know, because he'd been listening to it day after day, he got a standing ovation, the driver. Just like many of you, like Nicholas, how many times have you been coming to listen to my talks? I'm sure that you can go up here and give a talk and say, "Wow," just like Ajahn Brahm. They probably wouldn't know the difference if you put a pillow under your shirt and a brown robe. But, of course, these were professors and they were very, very sharp. And one of them was a bit dubious, you know. This didn't really look like Albert Einstein, even though it sounded like him. So the professor asked a question. A deep question on, you know, special relativity. To see if this really was Professor Einstein. And the driver, you know, imitating Einstein, said, "That is such a simple, easy question. It's so easy that my driver at the back could answer it. Come on, answer it." And of course the driver, which is really Professor Einstein, did. So, I heard that little story on the way to Bangkok Airport. I thought I'd share it with you, because it makes a lot of sense. Because you have heard many of the stories before, but they're always very useful. And today's talk, again, while I was overseas, got an email about another person wanted to ask a question about a particular line in the suttas called the Dhammapada. So when you give this a title, because they looked on the internet, all these talks, has he ever talked about the first line of the Dhammapada, which is the mind is the forerunner of all things? So because he couldn't find it, I had talked about that before, but it's, you know, embedded in other talks, where this is just about the mind and how powerful it is, how it's the forerunner of all things. So when you give the title of the talk, please put first line of Dhammapada somewhere in the title so this gentleman can find it. And the reason I talk about this, because, I mean, it's a central points of Buddhism, meditation, how powerful this mind actually is, and how when I go overseas, go anywhere, that even here, spend a lot of time just teaching how to train this mind, use its power for all sorts of different wonderful things in your life. Now, Buddhism had been meditating for such a long time, 2,500 years, so we've got the goods on meditation, on the nature of the mind, and how it works, and how you can use it, you know, to do really amazing things in your life. And of course, now we have mindfulness, and so many people teach mindfulness, even though they don't think a mind exists. There's a lot of hypocrisy there. No, the mind is just a byproduct of the brain. Your brain stops and your mind vanishes as well. So they know mindfulness, but they have no idea what the mind is, and they doubt its very existence. So part of my job is actually to prove what your mind actually is. But what do we mean by the mind, first of all? Before we say the mind is the forerunner of all things, and of course, some of you who come here, you meet your friends, and they ask that question. Part of my job is to give you the answers, so when you go to see your friends, you can also explain what the mind is. And there's two little stories, or that stories in an exercise, which, you know, I like to give people, so they understand exactly what this mind is. The first one, you know, is how I ask people, are you happy or sad? So, are you happy or sad right now? Which one is it? Yeah, okay, well, you don't have to answer me, just answer yourself. So, no, never mind. So, are you happy or sad? What is it? And then the next thing I say is, point to that happiness for me. Or point to that sadness. Use your finger, where is it? And I'm not going to do this demonstration, I'm going to get bored with doing my demonstrations because people just put their fingers all over the place. So you can't locate happiness, sadness, love. When you feel love for something, where actually is it? Where is it located? Is it in the object, maybe a little kid, a baby? You know, is it inside your heart? What happens if you have a heart transplant? Where does that love go there? So a lot of times, we cannot locate it in space. And it's certainly not in your brain. If you feel anger, is it your brain angry? And if you feel this beautiful compassion or inspiration, you know, can you really locate it in your brain? And of course not. Because things like the emotions, thoughts, fantasies, they are the stuff which belongs to the mind. In the same way that, how do you know what a garden is? A garden has trees and flowers and grass and benches. You know, it's very different than a shopping mall. You know a shopping mall because it's got Coles and Woolies and all these other little shops. That's about as much as I know about a shopping mall because I don't go in there very often. But, you know a shopping mall, put all the shops in there. You know the garden because of all the flowers and the trees and the bushes and the grass in there. You know a thing by what lives in it. So where you find love, kindness, anger, fear, that is what we mean by the mind. So you know it by its contents. Now, where does it live? You can find where the flower is, then you find where the garden is. You find where the tree is, that's where the garden is. You find out where Coles is, that's the shopping center. You find out, this is where you find out where the mind is. And you can't locate it in space. And the greatest argument I've got there, you have heard it before, that friend of mine whose daughter, grade one, 6 years of age, in a school, could have been five, in a school, teacher asks the question, what's the biggest thing in the world? Kid puts up a hand, biggest thing in the world is my daddy. Next kid, no, elephant. Next kid, mountain. Daughter of my friend from Cambridge years ago, my eye is the biggest thing in the world. Why is your eye the biggest thing in the world? Well, said this little professor. She did become a professor, went to Oxford, got a PhD from Oxford. So a pretty smart little girl. And she said, because my eye can see her daddy, it can see her elephant, it can see her mountain and so much more. If all of that can fit into my eye must be the biggest thing in the world. What it's doing there is just changing the perception to actually get an answer which you don't expect, but which is very accurate and true. If all of that can fit into your eye, imagine how big your eye must be. And when he sent me that answer many years ago, I responded by saying 9 out of 10, but not 10 out of 10, because your mind, this thing we call the mind, it can actually see everything you'll see in the real world. It can also imagine things you can never see. And it can hear and smell and taste and touch real feelings and imaginary feelings, and also can know things you'll never actually sense in the real world. Your fantasies, your dreams, your hopes. So your everything you'll ever experience, everything you ever can experience, can fit into your mind. So the mind is the biggest thing. I deliberately never said biggest thing in the world, because the world can be known, therefore it can fit into your mind. Now once you get that concept, a different way of looking at it, mind is not located in the brain or in the heart or anywhere in your body. The body is located in the mind. A different way of looking, and far more accurate and meaningful. And that's the first thing, when so the mind is the forerunner of all things. It's so big and so amazing. And once you can take that on board, then it's amazing just how this mind can create and do stuff. Again, when I was a student, one of the societies I loved going to was the Psychic Research Society. And one of the ways we used to do research on the power of the mind was hypnosis. And under hypnosis, you can record it, repeat the experiments. There's so much stuff you can do with hypnosis to show the power of your mind. Now this is not just to do healing, you know, on your sprained wrist or whatever you have over there, sir. It's not just to do that, but the experiment which really blew my mind and just how powerful this mind is was the old experiment where they put a nail in a piece of wood, convinced somebody under hypnosis that the nail was red hot, as if it's been under a blowtorch for half an hour and was glowing red. And then they touched that nail on the guy's skin. And because he believed it was red hot, of course he screamed in pain. I expected that because that was an emotional response. But what I never expected, but what I did see, was when the blister came up on his skin. That nail was just room temperature. You could touch it on a baby's skin and the baby wouldn't even move. But because his mind was under the impression it was red hot, it actually created a blister, a real red blister on his skin. His mind had created that. It wasn't just caused by material phenomena, because that nail was not hot enough to burn the skin. The mind had affected the body. Now, once you admit that evidence, which was clear, done many, many times, you can understand if that mind can cause a blister on your body, can cause a wound and damage to your body, then why can't that mind also create healing on your body? Can actually take away or reduce the size of tumors, which can take away sort of psoriasis over your body. You can take away arthritis, which you can actually see on a scan that there is stuff actually growing on your bones. Well, it can take away some of these other problems which face our modern world. I mean, physical stuff. And of course, it can and it does. One of the great things which I love doing, one of the talks I gave in Bangkok recently was at the hospital. I go to usually a couple of hospitals in Bangkok to give talks. And these are not to patients, these are to doctors. My next trip overseas is going to Hong Kong. And I was invited by one of the classes there was not ordinary, ordinary human beings, but these were the professors, the heads of department. I think it was in Queen Elizabeth Hospital, I forget which one it is, in Hong Kong Island, because they were really interesting. These were people who were teaching and doing research, interested on just the power of the mind to affect health outcomes. This is not just the mindfulness which people hear about these days, which is really, really common. That's only scratching the surface of how the mind can affect health outcomes. And this is actually something where research is being done, and it's amazing how effective it is. And I'm very happy that people are actually using some of the things which I've discovered and been talking. One of the things which we find out as a Buddhist practitioner, just simple meditation, is a simple thing which mindfulness shows you, being aware of your body, that every emotion that you can feel has a corresponding feeling, physical feeling in the body. The mind is sad, it does affect your physical body. You have sort of love, the body actually changes, the physiology of the body changes. And in particular, I've used this with the anxiety, the panic attacks, which do affect many people in this world. You go for an interview and you stuff up because you say the wrong thing, you're just so afraid. You go for a driving test. And you can drive so well when no one's around and you're being tested on this. And you do sort of an exam like kids do at school. And if it wasn't they could answer all those questions easily, but because it's an exam and your future depends upon it, the anxiety gets so strong that they stuff up. So much of life, we are not successful, we create problems for ourselves because of anxiety and panic. And sometimes people try and take medication for that, and sometimes the medication for anxiety usually has side effects, and sometimes it doesn't even have the proper effect. It's just like a placebo. Many of the medications for anxiety which people take. And I know the doctor in front of me here, she told me that she tried Ajahn Brahm's method of dealing with anxiety with a patient on oxygen because she was so anxious she couldn't breathe properly, and tried Ajahn Brahm's method. But when I was in Thailand, one of the doctors there said she'd heard me the year before, and she tried it as well. How'd it go? It worked, of course. Now, in Thailand, you can get away with that much more easily than in Australia. Because in Thailand, they're Buddhist, and if a monk says it, they'll just do it. And that's almost as good as if the research has been published in The Lancet or something. Because that's their faith in the monks. But over in Australia, United States, Europe, you have to have it published, first of all, in a legitimate journal of science before people take it seriously. But because it was Thailand, she took it seriously. This was a pregnant lady. This pregnant lady had great anxiety, and so came into the hospital, oxygen mask, couldn't breathe properly. Just, the panic, the anxiety. And the teaching was very clear, you can test this out for yourself, you can know it for yourself. Every emotion you experience in your mind has a corresponding physical manifestation in your body somewhere. And all you need to do is to recognize and to make that link, anxiety, how it feels in the body. Love, and how that feels in the body. Anger, what part of the body tenses up? You can actually feel that. You get to know that. You get to really know that and recognize this is an emotion here, in your mind, emotion, and then where it feels in the body and how it feels. And you can distinguish the different types of feelings to the different emotions. It's not all the feelings are the same. When I first went to Thailand, all the Thais looked the same. When you go to any country, all the Westerners look the same. They've all got big noses. That's what I was told. And but they're not the same. After a while, you know, you recognize the different people, who's what. You go to the monastery, all the monks look the same. But after a while, you can recognize who's who. Just with more awareness, more experience, you can recognize the different feelings in your body, the different manifestations of the emotions. And once you can actually connect them, to control, to work with the emotions in the mind, work with their physical counterparts. And I've said this before, you can get on the talks about anxiety, panic attacks. To do the panic attack or the anxiety, like this lady who had some anxiety to do with her pregnancy on oxygen when she came into the hospital, this doctor, she never gave her medication, straight to Ajahn Brahm's method, first of all. Find out, feel how you're feeling in the body, where that pain is, where that tension is, and just be kind to it, massage it. Massaging the body is a great way to relax the body. You can try what I was teaching earlier with meditation, to relax it directly by feeling it and by letting it go. But kindness, any sort of stroking it, massaging it, hugging it, that actually releases the physical counterpart to anxiety. And once the physical counterpart vanished, then the connecting emotion also vanishes. Such an easy thing to do. And of course it works, so that patient never needs to take medication, because some of these medications, especially if you're pregnant, maybe that might affect the fetus or the baby. I'm not quite sure, I'm not a doctor, but people say that when you've got another being in your womb, you have to be very, very careful of what you take in your mouth, because that affects not only you, but the little being in your womb. You may be able to endure it, but that is a very, very sensitive being inside. Maybe that medication may really harm them. So this is a totally safe way just to stroke that area, relieve the physical counterpart, and the emotion goes as well. Brilliant way of, without any side effects, of dealing with the emotions. And the theory behind it, the underlying principle, is your mind does affect the body. And the body, in return, affects the mind. This is actually how you can learn how to manipulate these things. So, that way, many of the emotions which really affect people, like depression. Where do you feel depression in your body? If you've got very deep depression, sometimes you're just so depressed, you haven't got the energy, you don't care enough to do any investigation. But moderate depressions, where do you feel it in your body? How does your body feel? Forget about the emotional part for the moment. Find out where the body feels. And how you can actually overcome that bodily feeling, lessen it, and with it the depression lessens as well. Knowing how the mind and the body work together. So there's many things like that which we can do, but also just how the mind can affect the body, especially if the mind becomes negative. Especially, I'm going to die, it's going to get worse. Or one of the things which I was telling doctors, please never do this. When the doctor tells the patient, it's going to hurt. Because when I used to watch movies, that's what they used to say in movies. Before they tortured someone, just the bad guys would say, you're going to wish you were never born. You know, whatever torture implement they have, they wave it in front of people's face, first of all. Because it's the mind stuff hurts more than the physical stuff. So, you get people afraid, and it hurts more. You don't get into fear, and pain is easy. One of the people here, I'm not sure if she stayed for the talk, no, she came, her father-in-law passed away recently. She's pregnant, 3 weeks, she said she's going to give birth. And she said she won't give birth at the funeral. I hope she doesn't give birth in the Buddhist society here. We've never actually had that yet, people giving birth during one of my talks. But I give so many talks, it's going to happen one day. That'd be really cool, wouldn't it? Giving birth, listen to a Dhamma talk. Anyway, this is also the case that a long time ago, people used to say that, oh, the doctor says it's going to be painful here and painful here, and even they called it labor pains. such a bad attitude. Don't call it labour pains. Call it labour energies. Labour force. And then when you actually don't mention pain, because it's pain, ooh, I don't like pain, it's going to sort of hurt. You don't mention pain, then actually just it feels a totally different experience. It happened to me many times, and I'm sure it's happened to you. I remember once, as a monk in Thailand, we would go barefoot. You know, always wear, especially on arms round without any shoes on. That was actually one of our rules, like simplicity and humility. Because in those days, that shoes were only for very rich people. So, walking back from arms round and trod on a 4-inch nail, a rusty one. And it went almost right through my foot, a couple of inches. Didn't actually penetrate up, but, you know, through the skin, but, you know, just almost. And I trod on that and went right up into my flesh. That much into the, well, maybe even more than that, into the foot. And I looked at it. Oh, it's trod on a nail. It didn't hurt at all. Until my friend said, "Oh, look at that, that's terrible." And as soon as he said that, it hurt like hell. And so I really, what'd you do that for? So a lot of times you can actually understand the way the mind looks at physical things, it can actually make pain. Or it can make it painless. So you can do that hypnosis. Things which would really cause you pain. Apparently the first time hypnosis happened, remember reading some books about it, some doctors went to China. And it wasn't hypnosis, it was like acupuncture. They couldn't believe by just sticking a few needles in to your skin, they could, you know, perform all these operations. And people didn't feel any pain at all. And they saw it actually works. And also, just like placebos, what was that case that I remember reading in the medical journal, that people with bad knees, now really sort of problems in their knees, that they put them under anaesthetic, and all they did was actually make an incision on their skin, sew it up again afterwards, and they lied to them. They said, "Oh, you know, your operation was very successful." And because they thought an operation had been done, they could see the scar, or the, you know, the bandages on them, and they thought they'd had a full operation, and they recovered. It was as effective as actually doing the real operation. Why? Because they believed. The mind actually interfered and said, "You have been healed," and you were healed. The mind is very powerful there. The opposite is what, in Buddhism, what I keep on saying, fault-finding mind. If you have a negative mind, fault-finding, you actually create the problems in this world. For example, relationships. I talk a lot about relationships in this Buddhist society, simply because if the relationship goes bad, if you have problems, who do you come to talk to? Me. And I just want an easy life. So on a Friday night in front of everybody, teach you how to have good relationships so you can leave me alone and I can go to bed early. I've just come in from Bangkok and I'm tired, so I want to rest. So teach it now, get it together, and then gives me an easy life and you an easy life. Yeah, okay, I mean, it is not really cruel and heartless to marriage counsellors. You know, I do them out of a job. But nevertheless, there's enough people outside for marriage counsellors that taking a few of their clients away, I don't think they really mind. And also, actually, that some of these stories you hear here, there was one guy, a very wealthy guy, you know, I was talking to yesterday afternoon in Singapore, and he goes to, I can't really name the name of this group, on the internet it's called a cult, but it's one of these New Age, how to be successful, change your mind, sort of groups. Cost a lot of money to join and to keep going to course after course. Something like the old Scientology, but, you know, much more advanced than that. And he was saying that he paid a lot of money for one of these courses. I mean, really big bucks, you know, five figures, you know, 10,000, 50,000 for one of these courses. You know what they taught him? They taught him if you're going on a walk in a forest with your partner and you hear a sound, quack, quack, and your partner says it's a chicken and you say it's a duck. He said, I've heard you say that so often before, and now these guys are doing it and charging $50,000 for that. At least I should get 10%. Or the Buddhist Society get 10%. Or 5% for monastery, 5% for the Buddhists. That's what they're doing. So a lot of these things, you know, which, you know, as a monk you learnt, you found out, and you explained to people, is used in incredible different ways. But at least it's being used, it's helped people, and rich people need to pay for it. Otherwise, if they don't pay for it, they think it's worthless. It happens so many times that, you know, people come here. Well, they don't come here, they actually call up, first of all. That old story, absolutely true, happened. Call you up. Here you teach meditation. Yes, we teach. I teach meditation. I'm a very well-known meditation teacher now. I teach meditation to monks in Sri Lanka. Teach teachers. And I said, do you teach meditation as a monk? Yeah, I teach meditation. How much do you charge? You come in Saturday afternoon, teach meditation. How much do I charge? The Buddhist Society charge. Charge nothing. And so this woman said, you can't be any good then, and hung up. Would you do that? Because people think the more you charge, the better you are. If you give it for free, you must be hopeless. You know, maybe you do it for free to learn the tricks, and then afterwards when you get better you charge a bit more, and as you go up the career ladder of a meditation teacher, you get more famous and you can charge more and more and more and more. But, you know, that's not the way that we operate. So instead, these days, when we ask, somebody asks, they call up, they email the president, how much do you charge for a Friday night talk? What's the entrance fee in the box? You say, not, it's no charge. You don't say it's free. If you say that, then people think it's worthless. Honestly, some people are like that. So when somebody rings up our president and says, you teach your meditation tonight? Yeah, how much does it cost? He says it's priceless. It's a beautiful word, priceless. Because it means you don't have to pay anything, but it's not worthless. It's huge. Priceless is a wonderful word. So anyway, that these things are used because they actually work. And the negativity, the fault-finding mind in relationships, why does that break up your relationship? If you find fault in your husband, you see his faults, it won't cure him. His faults will get worse. What you see, how your mind sees, you create. Just like if you believe that the nail is hot, it actually creates the blister. If you think your husband's having an affair, you create the conditions for him to have an affair. You don't trust him. The marriage starts to disappear. And the husband just does what you expected him to do. If you expect your wife to argue with you, then she will. Please never underestimate the power of the mind to create what you expect. I've used this many times. It's really amazing to see its effect. Where I've really used this is in prisons, in jail. Don't to find fault with them. If you find fault with them, they're murderers, they're rapists, and judge them like that, they will murder more people when they're released. Rape more. That's what you expect. Instead, you don't expect that. You have a positive mind. One of the places I learned this, and this is so important in our education system, why is it that we judge kids at school? I'm a bit radical there. When I was in Singapore, where the most stressful education system I've come across in the world. So I was telling all the parents, I say tell the kids first of all, just last night, I told the kids, listen to me, if you pass your exams, you will have to do another one next year. You don't get out, you don't escape. But if you fail an exam, then you're free. You don't have to take any more. So you get the message? Failure means freedom. Success means you have another stressful year in the next layer of education. Is that what you really want? And the kids say, "Ah, that's a good point." And the parents say, "Shut up, Ajahn Brahm. Don't say that." But isn't it true? And anyway, just getting degrees, is that going to really help you in your life? And I gave all the list of people who got thrown out of university or just dropped out. You know, Einstein, Steve Jobs, Michael Dell, and you probably can give lots more people who never finished degrees and they were highly successful. So look at me, I've actually passed my degree. Look where I ended up, penniless. But anyhow, yeah, if you can do it, great, but you don't have to do it. But what I learned the only reason I became a school teacher, because my girlfriend was up at Durham University, so that's the only reason to go up there to do something. So I became a school teacher for 1 year, but when I was studying education, that's where they had educational psychologists, marvelous experiment, I have to say it in brief, because many of you have heard it before, this really just blew me away. Real experiment, two classes of children, same year, maybe year 8 or 9, not an important year. So they got permission to do an experiment, two classes of the same year, about 30 kids in each class a long time ago, gave them an exam at the end of the year so they can see how to grade them for next year. And of those 60 kids, the kids who came first, 4th and 5th, 8th and 9th, 12th and 13th, 16th and 17th, they went in one class. The kids who came 2nd and 3rd, 6th and 9th, 6th and 7th, 10th and 11th, 14th and 15th, they went in the other class. Split as equally as they possibly could. And the principal, there's only two psychologists in on the experiment. The three people, only three people who knew what was going on. The principal and the two psychologists. And they tried to choose teachers, equal ability. Even they went as far as classrooms with equal facilities. They went out of their way to extreme lengths to make the facilities as equal as possible. They never told the kids or the parents the results. All they did was say, "Your kid next year is in class A and your kid is in class B." The two classes, as equal as you possibly could make it, based on the end of the year exams, were split into class A and class B. And because the nature of our society and culture, we always assume class A is the top level and class B are the dummies. And that's what the parents assumed. "Wow, how did you get in class A? You haven't done any work, you've been playing computer games all the time. But well done, son, carry on. I don't know how you do it, you're in class A, congratulations." And poor kids, other kids, "You're in class B. Right, no TV for you. No extra, I'm going to get you extra tuition. I want you to go into class A." And that was, the kid who came number two in the whole year. Because the parents assumed class B were the lower half. So did the teachers. They thought that the class A was the top half from the year before. So they actually expected more. They taught at a higher level. And those who had class B kids, they never expected so much. So they never pushed them. They never taught at a level which would really inspire them, encourage them, and improve them as much. And of course, the kids themselves thought they were class B kids or class A kids. They weren't. Totally equal. But 1 year later, and the results were published, end of year exam, kids in class A did so much better as if they were the top half from the year before. they literally became Class A kids. And those who were in Class B did so badly, you could say that because they were called Class B and they believed B was bottom, they became Class B children. The power of belief, the mind, and how it all reinforces, you know, one's belief that you're bad, you're hopeless. They became hopeless. Not really hopeless, but you know, they came not as good as the ones in Class A. And that really shook me, because how much time do we believe, I can't do biology? If you believe you can't, then you will never be able to. That I can't get to university because I'm a Class B kid. That doesn't mean anything at all. If you want to, you can. The power of the mind can either encourage you to go places you really need to go and you want to go there, or it can stop you because you think you're not good enough. One of my monks, I won't say who he is, he told me that when he was a young guy at school, he did a bad term at school, and his grandfather came up to him and said, "You're a stupid kid, you're a stupid kid." He was Vietnamese Australian. "Stupid kid, stupid kid." And he told me he thought that was true. And that was the one time which stopped his education. He's a very brilliant man. You see him do anything I ask him to do, whether it's, you know, just doing some building work or just doing carpentry. He's just brilliant. But because his grandfather, who he really looked up to and was, you know, had authority, said he was stupid, he actually believed that and he became stupid. Now, I don't think he even passed grade 12, I'm not sure, but, you know, he just certainly never went to university because he thought he couldn't do it. The power of the mind is first. If you say you can, meditation. I have a huge amount of work to do to convince people, yes, you can meditate. If you believe you can't, then that's it. If you believe, no, I'm going to fall asleep, I'm hopeless, I think too much, I can't stop thinking, I've got to somehow convince you, you can stop thinking. And if you haven't heard this before, it's a very simple thing to prove that you can stop thinking and be perfectly aware. Listen to your mind as I am speaking. In those spaces, what was happening in your mind? You were aware. There it was again, but not thinking until the mobile phone went off. That's enough. We got it. Can you experience? Yeah, I can be silent and aware without thinking. That changes so much that now you know it can be done. That big blockage when the mind is fault-finding, negative, I can't do this. That's why when a doctor says, you're sick, 3 months to live, 1 month to live, there's no cure. Sometimes, you know, if I hadn't got all my precepts, I would hit that doctor. But a lot of times they don't say that. They say, well, maybe. One of my favorite doctors, I never met him. He's probably dead now, because I got this story from a doctor disciple in Sydney, maybe about 20 years ago, 25 years ago. He was a professor at the medical school, the head honcho in Sydney somewhere. I think it was Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. And this doctor, he said, when he went to medical school, the first lecture, the welcoming address by the professor, the head of the whole medical school, was memorable in its honesty. This professor, who is going to, this is last year, about to retire, said, 50% of what we're going to teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. My problem is I don't know which 50% it is. That is a scientist. That is medicine. That is a health professional who knows that science, knowledge, ideas are always work in progress, never ever finished. Just like all these upgrades of the roads, it's never finished. They close one portion of the road to upgrade it and then they finish that and another portion is upgraded. Never finished. Just like Bodhinyana Monastery or Dhammasara Monastery, never finished. Always upgrading our Buddhist society, always needing more help, more people, more help for the AGM. Those of you who are having a difficult time in life, in Buddhism, the only reason you have difficult times in life is relationships, with work, with money, or just general, just, you know, things aren't going right. It's always because you don't have enough good karma. So if you want to make some good karma, come to the AGM. if you have a difficult week afterwards, don't blame me. I gave you a warning. Making good karma. No, whatever. But anyway, that negativity in the mind, it can create, you look at your wife, you look at your husband with a negative mind, and that's what you see. You look at kids with a negative mind, and they live up to that. So if you look at your wife and you're a Class B wife, if that's how you think, that is what she becomes. And those of you with kids, for goodness sake, encourage your kids, lift them up. In other words, convince your kids, brainwash them, that they are Class A kids. And then they'll become Class A kids. The power of your mind is huge. It's not only that, the power of the mind to create the world. How many of you, I always have to mention this every time these days, because this guy's in the news every day, Donald Trump. Now, what do you expect from Donald Trump? You create a Donald Trump. What you expect is what you get. That's the problem. You could have an election here in West Australia in a couple of weeks. Politicians, what do you think about politicians? What you expect, what you create, is what you will get. Don't underestimate the power of the mind. If you can expect, change your attitude. Don't call them Class B people. Then you get a better range of politicians. They will live up to expectations or live down to your criticism. Amazing just how the mind actually works. I'm trying my best. I'm only one mind. I need your minds to help. Expect more, see better, and that's what you will get in your life, in your career. In my career, I am, and I think I can say this without any ego, a very successful monk. Why? Why is our Buddhist Society West Australia, and I travel around the world, put the best Buddhist society in the world? Certainly. Just on facts. Why? It's because we've expected it to be. Don't fault find. If you look at the faults, the weeds grow. If you look at the flower, we water the flowers grow. Very simple. What you create, what you expect, what you look for. The mind can create a burn. The mind, if it expects bad behavior, will create that bad behavior. If the mind can do other things, look at good behavior, it can create good stuff as well. That's why the mind is the forerunner of all things. And this is in other people's lives. You almost always can understand, in my life, I can understand that. I can actually change myself. Again, with a bit of belief, I can do this. 50% of what the doctor said we're going to teach you is wrong. We don't know which it is. So follow the advice of doctors. They've got a good idea, but don't limit yourself by that. And maybe your mind can create amazing outcomes. When I go to the Cancer Support Association, Wellness Association over in Cottesloe, that's the sort of stuff I teach. Amazing results happen. They call them anomalies. They say, well, it shouldn't happen this way. You should be dead by now, but you're still alive. I don't know why. I know why. It is the power of the mind. Mind is the forerunner of all things. It's huge. Never, ever underestimate that. Football teams, Fremantle Dockers or West Coast Eagles. This is our local Australian Football League teams. Why do one team win, another team lose? They have sports psychologists. People who actually say that you believe that you're going to win. You can create stuff. And they do win. That's the difference. They've got the same skills, but there's something else which is really important. That power of the mind to create success, to create health, to create harmony, to create sort of a beautiful partner. You create them. Can be done. I've created, I'll help create with many others, a beautiful committee last year. Create beautiful monks, beautiful nuns. Do you like our monks and nuns? Some of them are just, I get all these, we send a couple over to Melbourne, three actually, and because I travel around a lot, I get all these praises. Wow, your monks are so great. Can they please stay there? Can we have some more? It's Bodhinyana Monastery, or rather Buddhist Society of Western Australia, is a high quality, world recognized brand. High quality. And people respect that. Why? Where did that come from? What is the training? What is the training, Sumangala? The training is just this wonderful building people up with positive attitude, creating monks and nuns and lay Buddhists by the power of the mind. All these teachings you can get from the internet. You can read in books. There's something else you get when you come to a place like this. Sometimes, why do I have to go to Sri Lanka? Why do I have to go to Thailand? Why do I have to go the next time to Hong Kong? Actually, before then, to Canberra just for a couple of days. Why? Why do I have to travel and burn lots of fossil fuels and be really bad for the environment when you get all these talks on the internet whenever you want for free? And they say, no, we listen to that, but we want to see it live. What do you mean live? What's the difference? Maybe we can get virtual reality next time. So, you know, people can put the goggles on and they don't have to travel anywhere. But no, there's something else that happens. Because somehow you can't transmit the mind over the internet. You have to be right in front of a person for that to work. And that's amazing, the sort of stuff which I've seen happen. And the amazing stuff, the psychic stuff. Sometimes people don't believe that, but I've seen it. It works. Where does it come from? There's mind power. People believe that doesn't exist. They're missing out. So, this is what we teach. This is what we train as. This is how we encourage people. And you can feel it for yourself. In your health, emotional health, physical health, in your life, your career, your relationships, and just generally understanding just how easy it is to be happy, to meditate, to be still, if you can train the power of the mind. One last bit of teaching. And I remember this because I went to an old friend, we're talking about Ajahn Chah's life, because he was translating Ajahn Chah's biography. And one of the teachings which we talked about, famous teaching, but powerful. If you want to be strong and healthy physically, exercise. But if you want to have a strong mind, keep it still. That's an Ajahn Chah teaching. Wow, I remember that. If you want to have a strong mind, meditate, keep it still. If you want to overcome dementia, it comes from a weak, worn out mind. Keep it still, keep it powerful. And then you can actually make use of the power of the mind. We are just like weaklings with weak muscles in our mind. However, you meditate, you train your mind to be incredibly strong. The mind is a forerunner of all things. First verse of the Dhammapada, strengthen it. It's amazing the power and the success you have in your health, mental, physical, and your inner happiness. Thank you for listening. Very good. If you feel like clapping, you can clap, but do it properly. Very good. Okay, so now we have some questions from all over the world. A couple of weeks ago, did we actually find out the guy from Yemen, Mohammed, if it's real? Ukraine, Germany, and India this evening. From Ukraine, does a tranquil mind result in a healthy body? Yes. Still mind becomes a very strong mind. And when you have a strong mind, you can do amazing things with your body. So yes, tranquil mind does result in a very healthy, long-lived body. From Germany, I have chronic pain and breathing problem, and the pain causes me constant irritation. I can only meditate while lying down because I have no energy. In meditation, I can ease my ailments, but I can't get enough energy and peace to go into deep meditation. What should I do? Can I heal myself? Yes, you can. Your mind is incredibly powerful. Personally, I remember having typhus fever, being in hospital about 3 or 4 weeks at this time. My memory is not clear on this, but it's a long time in hospital with a fever. I had absolutely no energy at all. In the old days, wards with a line of beds, 6 beds on either side of the long corridor. The toilet was at the end of the corridor. No bedpans, one nurse who wouldn't actually help anybody. So to get to the toilet, and that was an expert, it was like climbing Mount Everest. I would get up and hold on to the rails of the bed, steady myself, and lurch, like fall to the next bed, and grab those rails, and wait another 2 or 3 minutes before I had the energy to go to the next bed. I didn't have good karma. The monks with the best karma had their bed next to the toilet. Mine was about 5 beds away. So when I got to that toilet, I sat on there for a long time. I'm not going to do that too many times a day. But in that deep exhaustion, I was laying down, and I was a bit depressed, but I rebel. I'm a very rebellious monk, actually. So I say, anyone says it can't be done, I say, why not? So I was laying down there feeling terrible, and I thought, I'm going to meditate. And I got this incredibly deep meditation. And that was just so blissful. When you've got an aching, tired, body which has been sick for 3 or 4 weeks with fever, was that 40 years ago? And then to get into a deep meditation, leave your body, and wow, that was just so nice. Because I was comparing to what was happening afterwards. So you could do that. And I wish I'd have been more attentive, because I was just learning the tricks of the trade. Probably pretty sure that was the time when the fever broke. So yes, you can heal yourself. You can. Do it. You can get deep meditation, lying down, no matter how sick you are. Go for it. But do it correctly. Go into it. Always inside, inside, inside. And don't fight. And then it works. Meditation question, how can I keep the balance of my head and protect from drooping down when my body is relaxed? Because after a point my neck starts to be in pain and disturbs my meditation. Okay, one thing you can do is to tie a string around your head and tie it to the back of the wall or something. Put a nail in the wall so you can tie your head so it doesn't droop down further. But actually, that's a bit sort of stupid. The main thing is just let it happen, let it be. If you're drooping, it means you're tired, you're exhausted, so sleep more. When you do go to bed, sleep efficiently, so you don't worry about the past and the future. So you spend about an hour or 2 hours just trying to get to sleep. What a way, you don't have that time anymore to spend, you know, going to sleep. You want to hit the sack and go to sleep pretty quickly. You haven't got enough time to do it properly. Learn how to sleep efficiently. For goodness sake, don't waste time. And once you can go to sleep efficiently, you can sleep more time to sleep. During the daytime, just don't think too much, don't worry too much, because that tires you out. So that when your body is not so exhausted, yeah, maybe a little bit of tiredness, but not that too long, and it will just straighten itself up. Sign like exhaustion. It drops down too much. Your body's relaxed, but it is not energized. So, if you can prepare, always remember, meditation doesn't start when you close your eyes. It starts, you know, the day before, just this day. If you want to have deep meditation here, when you come here, you don't need to go around talking to people, having coffee, and just exciting yourself. Come in this room early, just meditate before the talk, and then when the talk comes, get inspired. Or when you do the meditation, you're already ahead of the game because you've got into it already, and you overcome a lot of the tiredness. And that means that the neck pain, because you are drooping, you don't droop so long because you don't need to be so tired. You don't overcome tiredness by willpower. I'm not going to be tired. You overcome tiredness by wisdom, power, and kindness. Learn how to sleep better, relax more, and don't do so much during the day. A lot of times people do stuff they don't really need to do. So, be efficient. Okay, any questions from the audience here? Yeah.
Do you believe on average, they said we use 5%
of our mind? Oh, yeah. No, I don't believe that at all. It's not up to 5%. Not even a fraction of that. Because look, if you ever get into a deep meditation, after you come out, your mind feels incredibly powerful. And you can understand why people can do these amazing tricks. Because it's really energized. Really powerful. And so, that is one of my tricks. I should be really exhausted. Long trips, busy life. And people say, Ajahn Brahm, can't you take a rest tonight? You've just been talking all over the place in Bangkok and Singapore and not having any rest. And come over here and just give a talk at a Friday evening. I say, how do you do that? And I'm telling you how you do that. Meditate, get mind really peaceful, get the energy coming out, power coming out. You feel incredible energy. That's how I work. I've learned that trick. You can learn that trick. You can be far more productive than whatever career you do. You can, all the negativity, that burns energy uselessly. I'm never, you know me a long time, many of you, I'm not negative. And because I'm not negative, I preserve my energy. Getting angry at others burns so much energy. You haven't got that to waste. So, positive, peaceful, kind. Whoa, you're energized. Okay, thanks for those questions. So, really, okay.
Thank you for tonight. It's it's always fantastic, amazing.
Oh, thank you for that question.
I'd just like to share something on the power of the mind. Earlier this year, last year, I went to Sydney to do a walking on coals workshop, and everyone said, "Oh, it's too, just don't worry about it. Just it's ridiculous. Don't bother." And I went, and I thought, "Oh well, I can look if it's too hard." But we got so psyched up, it was fantastic. We actually broke blocks first with our hands, with a, you know, chopping, and really feeling that force coming in. And then when we walked the coals, quite a long distance, maybe from here to you, I just floated across. And I thought, it can't be the real thing, because it was just so, you know, just so enjoyable. But quite a few people got burned. They actually had blisters on their feet. So it was proof that that was really hot, boiling hot, red hot. So, and that just, it was just such a wonderful experience at 69 to actually feel that, you know, I still have that power to be able to do things like that.
Okay.
So thank you.
There we go. So you can try that. Maybe not walk on coals, but walk in coals. Supermarket. Sorry, I had to tell a joke. It's my nature. I can't resist it. Okay, but thank you for that. But that's very true. Amazing what people can do if they have a powerful mind. Okay, so here we go. Let's go and pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami